Okay, so that's just a little bit, hopefully giving you something that you can use in your life and think about and inquire more into. What I'd like to do now is open it up for questions and comments, and please feel free to ask whatever you like. Yes?
Recently, I just eradicated a baby lizard in my altar, and I can't get over it, you know. I feel so sad, and, you know, I said, you know, I shouldn't have done it because I meant to, well, to keep it in the cover, but it sort of, you know, died, and I still can't get over it. Can you advise me?
Okay. So he, in the process of cleaning his altar, came across a small lizard, and you had put something over it to try and remove it, and then somehow the lizard had died. Oh, I see. So the lizard wound up in the incense urn, and it wound up dying, and so he feels a lot of regret and remorse for that. So then his question is what to do. Yeah. So we have a purification process in Buddhism that has four steps. Yeah. The first one is regret. So regret is different from guilt. Regret is just saying I made a mistake and I regret it. Okay. And then the second is making a determination not to do it again. Yeah. So in the future, you know, if I find other living beings, I'll be more careful about where I place them and what happens. The third is restoring the relationship. So what this means is if we have done negative actions in terms of the three jewels, taking refuge in them, or if we've done negative actions towards sentient beings, cultivating love and compassion and altruism towards them. Okay, so in this case, then you would cultivate compassion for the lizard. And I think in these kinds of situations, what can be helpful to do is to say, okay, I harmed somebody, and that was, you know, my own mistake, and I regret it, and I'm going to be careful in the future. But by, you know, when I encounter the continuity of this living being in a future life, yeah, either their future life or my future life, by the power of my practicing the Dharma now, may I only be a benefit to them in the future. Yeah, and may, you know, by my really trying to practice now, may I, you know, help them to meet the Dharma in their future life, or lead them on the path, or inspire them to practice. Yeah. And so that way okay, right. So what he was also doing is making prayers for the lizard. And I think that's also very good to do, to say, you know, may you have a good rebirth, may you never be born in the lower realms again. You know, may you have a precious human life and meet fully qualified teachers and practice the Dharma and become a Buddha. Really making prayers for those beings. And then the fourth of the four opponent powers is doing some kind of remedial action. So this could be bowing or making offerings. You could make offerings and dedicate it for the lizard and for all sentient beings. It could be printing books for free distribution, offering service to the temple, offering service or making contributions to various charities for the poor and the helpless, the needy. You know, any kind of positive action is that fourth opponent power. Okay? Okay.
Good afternoon. We're all down here in this life to learn our lessons as a result of the way we live in our past lives. So in this life, we run into difficulties of various types. Mm-hmm. How do we know that we are not interfering with the lessons of someone karmic lessons of someone in this life when we render them help. Mm-hmm. For example, we know that this person is obviously going down the wrong way from our experience or something, mm-hmm. and we want to lend a hand. But in doing that, are we denying this person a chance to go through his karmic lessons?
Mm. Okay. So the person's asking, are we interfering with somebody's karma and denying them the ability to learn certain lessons if we interfere and do some compassionate activities towards them? Before getting to the answer to that question, I have a slightly different worldview, okay? I don't think that we were born here to learn lessons, because that worldview that says we were born here to learn lessons presupposes a creator being or an external being who is managing the universe and designating lessons for us to learn. And from a Buddhist viewpoint, there is no external creator or external manager of the universe. Okay, there's no grand lesson plan. Yeah? The thing is, we either learn from our experience or we don't. But there's no lesson plan made by somebody else of what we have to learn and what we don't have to learn. Okay, so just in terms of our worldview. Then second, the question in particular, are we denying somebody the opportunity to grow when we sometimes interfere when they're having difficulties? Okay, this takes a great deal of skill to answer. And sometimes if we are not very wise, we can really misjudge situations and abuse the Buddhist idea of karma to rationalize our own lack of compassion and apathy. Okay? So somebody might say, well, there are people who are poor, and they are poor because of their karma. But if I try and help them, then I'm interfering with their karma of, you know, and they have to burn off this karma of being poor, and I'm going to interfere with them if I try and help them. Or somebody could say, well, they're poor, and there's a lesson for them to learn in being poor, so I'm not going to help them. These ways of thinking are completely wrong, totally wrong. Okay, and those ways of thinking can be misused used in a twisted kind of logic to rationalize our own lack of compassion, to rationalize oppression of people, you know, to deny people human rights, to not help the people who are needy. So this way of thinking should be abandoned. Yeah. And when people ask this kind of question, you know, it's like, oh, well, but, you know, the impoverished, they're there because of their karma, or the oppressed are there because of their karma, or the people in Darfur are starving because of their karma, and we shouldn't interfere. Then I say to them, well, does that mean that if you're hit by a car and you're lying in the middle of the street bleeding, that somebody shouldn't take you to the hospital because they're interfering with your karma? And because there's a lesson for you to be learned by bleeding there in the middle of the street without anybody to help you? Yeah. It's the same situation, isn't it? It's the same situation. So then the person always goes, no, I want to be helped if I get it. I'm bleeding in the middle of the street. Yeah. Okay. Now, there are situations where you try to help somebody and the person is not receptive to the help that you're giving them. Okay? For whatever reason, you know, they're not receptive to the help that you're giving. In that kind of situation, you have no choice but just to let go And you might know that that person's going to experience difficulty because of the way they're thinking. Yeah. But you have to let them do that because they're not open at that time. But you don't give up on them. You remain there. They go through their difficulty, and sometimes they might learn something from it and then come back and say, you know, now I'm receptive. So for specific examples, I do a lot of work with prisoners in the U.S., you know, people who have been arrested for various kinds of things. Some are violent crimes, some are nonviolent crimes. And some of them have told me that in their lives, it's like they had to really hit bottom before they could begin to change their lives. Yeah. And so it was only by their hitting bottom that they realized that they were doing something wrong. So in those kinds of situations, you know, their friends or relatives may have tried to help them. They may have been resistant to the help. And then as the friend or relative, you just have to back off. You know, they crash. They wound up in prison. Sometimes they spent many years being angry in prison. And then at a certain point, they realized, oh, my own actions got me here. And I have to change if I'm going to do something differently. Yeah. So in those kinds of situations, you know, I mean, the men I work with have told me themselves that it's only really when they crash that they learn something. Yeah. But hopefully, most of the people we try and help don't have to do that. Yeah. But sometimes you encounter people and they don't want aid. And they're determined to, you know, do their unhealthy lifestyle, and then they experience the result of it. And then we only hope that they learn from that.
Same question I mentioned from the gentleman just talking about the lizard case.
Mm-hmm.
It's like in our daily household, there's mm-hmm. a lot of insect crawling all over.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't do something about it, it's going to mess mm-hmm. our food.
Oh, yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
how should we deal with it? That's one part of it. Then the other part is the more bigger environment type. Like for example, the bird flu incident mm-hmm. type. If the people, the environment people do not do culling on all the chicken, bird flu mm-hmm. start to spread. So the people that actually do culling are actually killing.
Mm-hmm.
So, both situations are killing.
Mm-hmm.
So, how should we deal with it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we don't do something, something bad will happen or may happen. Thank you.
Okay. So, this question often gets asked, you know, about, you know, if there's disease-bearing animals or insects, and if you don't kill them, then they're going to harm humans, and what to do, and there's ants in our house, and what to do, and... I've been in Singapore 20 years, and every year they ask this question. And I've even put it in my book, and they don't read my book. And I always get the feeling, you know, not necessarily from you, but many people when they ask this question, it's like they want me to say it's okay to kill. You know? They're really kind of wanting me to be like the Pope and absolve them of all sin. You know? And say this action is karma free. You know? And I can't do that. I can't do that. So, you know, these are the kinds of very difficult situations that we encounter by living in samsara. And this is why we want to get out of samsara, so we don't have to encounter these situations. So these situations are not karma-free. You know, there's karma accumulated. The karma accumulated depends a lot on our motivation, you know, on how we carry out an action. Different people are going to make different decisions about how to deal with these situations. And so according to how different people think and how they their different actions, they'll accumulate different karma. Okay. What's next? Another question that I've been asked for 20 years. I'm joking.
Venerable, there's a written question here, if I could read it out. How does one then be sure that the good morning is something else?
Okay, so if you're one of those people and somebody says good morning to you and you start to think, oh, what do they want from me? How do you really know that they're not wanting something from you? That's the question. You don't know, but who cares? Really? Why do we always have to be on the lookout about somebody wants something from me? You know, why can't we just go through life and be happy and cheerful? Somebody says good morning, you accept it as good morning. There's no detrimental result from saying good morning and smiling at the person, is there? You know, even if from their side they're thinking, oh, I'll say good morning and then they'll like me and then I'll ask them to loan me $1 million and they'll do it. You know, I mean, even if somebody's thinking that, there's no problem in your accepting their good morning. You can still say no when they ask you for $1 million. You know? It's like, why do we have to be so suspicious of other people all the time? Just accept it. And if somebody is asking for something unreasonable, then you say, no, I'm sorry, I can't do that. That's it. Yeah? I think we're so afraid of other people taking advantage of us. Are we afraid of taking advantage of other people? What accumulates negative karma for us? Others taking advantage of us or us taking advantage of them? What accumulates the negative karma on our part? It's our own actions of taking advantage of other people, isn't it? Now, it's very interesting. Everybody I meet is very suspicious of other people taking advantage of them, but nobody I meet takes advantage of other people. Isn't that remarkable? Yeah? So remarkable. I meet all the people who have only good intentions towards others. And these poor people are always beset by other people who take advantage of them. And I meet only the kind, benevolent ones. I never meet the other ones. Ah, just remarkable. But, you know, really, if you think about it, what is more dangerous, others taking advantage of us or us taking advantage of them? If you really believe in karma, what's more dangerous for you? Us taking advantage of others, us being selfish and uncontrolled and manipulative and greedy. That is much more dangerous karmically. You know, somebody else can try and manipulate us. We just say no. Yeah, not too difficult. You just have your smarts about you and you say no. But us lying to ourselves and manipulating other people, you know, and even lying to ourselves, lying to them, blah, 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 that is much more dangerous karmically. And that's what we need to be, attentive to.
Well, my question is the same almost. I understand that a monk can liberate whether it's an ant, cockroach or lizard by the wisdom and compassion. So what's the point of view?
I'm not sure what you
said. A monk can liberate ants, cockroach, everything with the wisdom and compassion.
But it's not a thing that, you know, monks and nuns can do things that other people can't. Yeah, I mean, we're subject to the same laws of karma as everybody else. We have to use our smarts when we make decisions. Yeah? So we're all stuck in the same difficult situation. And we all have to just do the best we can and have as much of a positive motivation as we can. And we all might come to different decisions about what to do in some of these difficult situations. You have announcements?
Well, I think we have to show some kindness to Venerable. We have kept her long enough. Really, we have to thank Venerable for giving us such an inspiring talk. So if you may, say sadhu, 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 sadhu.
And I'd like to lead us in the dedication as a way of concluding. Okay. So let's just rejoice that we were able to share the Dharma together today. And let's rejoice at all the goodness there is in the world in general. And rejoice at all the virtuous activities that any living being has created at any time. And then let's dedicate all this merit, this positive potential, good energy, so that all of us can continually have good circumstances for practicing the Dharma and to take advantage of those good circumstances. May we always help each other on the path and never hinder each other. May our hearts of compassion continually expand and our compassionate deeds spread throughout the universe. May all beings develop wisdom and compassion in their own hearts. And may all beings attain full enlightenment. Due to this merit, may we soon attain the enlightened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind, not yet born, arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore. I really rejoice at what all of you at Buddhist Fellowship are doing, and I've heard a lot about your compassionate activities and social welfare work in Myanmar and Sri Lanka and other places, and I really commend you on that. It's quite wonderful. Thank you.